singer,
well, yeah, your
baseline
is like lady with acoustic guitar,
right,
singing, right?
Yes.
Or jam band or something
well,
like that.
Yeah,
like,
maybe. But yeah, definitely like lyrics really stripped down, really like emotionally raw and vulnerable. Like that's the type of music I like. And this is the opposite of that.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Never Mind the Music.
What are we going to talk about today, Mark?
Some electronic dance music, some future bass.
EDM, they call it.
EDM, that's what the kids say. Mm-hmm. Remember the term electronica when that was what was used in the 90s?
Yeah, wasn't there like an album called electronica by
is
some
there?
Band?
I don't know, but that
know,
was
whatever.
Like the term of art, at least in the like categories at the record store or whatever in the 90s, and then that term just disappeared. But,
yeah,
you know.
There's a big community around EDM.
Sure.
Do you ever go to any of their like raves or show? You don't seem like a rave type of guy.
No, I can remember like being in high school when people started going to raves and just feeling like sort of FOMO, more fear of being left out, but not at all really feeling like that scene was for me. Like I was a rock guy at the time. Like,
yeah.
And so there was a little bit of the like, ooh, synthesizers that I've talked about before, mm-hmm. which is funny considering how much I like synth stuff now. But yeah, like the rave culture that, you know, I know it goes way further back than that, but kind of hit the suburbs of San Diego in the mid 90s. Never once was that. I bet you went to some raves, right?
I went to like precursors to raves. So,
you were at the warehouse in Chicago where house music was born.
No.
And, no.
But like there was, I used to go to festivals, like I'll call them hippie festivals for
sure.
The sake of this podcast, but like camping music festivals.
Sure.
And there was one, I think I mentioned in a previous episode in Rothbury, Michigan, that it was really like they called it Rothbury was the name of the festival I went to, but that turned into the Electric Forest, which is now like a big EDM festival in the scene. And at the Rothbury Music Festival, there were like precursors to that. Like it was a forest and they had all these like stages set up in the woods and like dance parties in the woods and weird lighting and weird, like real like, theatrical stuff happening on the grounds of the festival that like kind of iterated into what is now EDM. They realized the market was kind of flooded for hippie concerts.
Right.
And kind of transitioned that site into a big EDM festival. And now it's one of the most well-known or most popular.
But you were there, that was 90s when you were going to those.
No,
like
that
high school?
Rothbury probably was 2005, 2006.
Oh, okay.
It was like
the
first Rothbury Festival.
So yeah, the rave thing had been going on for a while.
And that was the last hippie camping festival I went to. That's when I realized I'm done. You know, the minute you start bringing like your own porta potty or like we were trying to go to sleep and it was like 11 at night and there were like so much partying around our tent and we'd be like, guys, quiet down.
Because you were so old at that point. You were like 22 or whatever. You're like, oh, come on.
Old for that scene, for
that's
sure.
That's funny, yeah.
And I was already working in higher ed at that point. I just kept thinking, I hope all these kids are going to the college in the fall. Like, I hope they called their mom today.
I'm
I think I'm done. So
this is a little later than that. The song we're talking about here, 2016, The Chainsmokers, Don't Let Me Down.
I feel like I still hear this on the radio.
Yeah, this was a pretty big hit. So this is The Chainsmokers featuring Daya, right? And this peaked at number 3 when it came out. So from their EP Collage. Yeah, and you still hear this from time to time. Mm-hmm. I chose this song because it's pretty, I was struck musically by a thing, obviously, that I wanted to talk about. But like it's still in the sort of ecosystem of pop music. I will say, certainly I hear Closer more.
Mm-hmm.
And that song was a number 1, so that makes more sense. It's the one they did with Halsey, 2016 also, from the same EP.
So they did a lot of like collaborations with people.
I think that's what they do. Like one of the guys, So it's two guys, Alex, Paul, and Andrew Taggart. Alex is like the DJ, also seems to be kind of the manager.
Alex Paul.
Paul, yeah. Pal? I don't know how to pronounce it.
P-A-L-L. Two first names always throws me off.
Well, it's P-A-L-L.
Oh.
So, but Andrew Taggart is the primary songwriter, but also sings. I think as time goes on, sings even more and more. Like he's singing in closer.
Cool.
But yeah, they do a lot of collaborations. The other one that would have been kind of one of their biggest hits was the one they did with Coldplay. Something Just Like This, which is from their debut album. Did you hear this one?
Yeah, it sounds just like the song you just played to me. That's like so similar, right? And in fact, in my head, they're the same song.
It's pretty similar. The drops are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. I do think Don't Let Me Down's drop is very different. Don't Let Me Down's drop is almost, feels almost 10 years earlier. With the sort of squelchy synths, it feels a bit of a different vibe. The Coldplay thing, it doesn't say featuring Chris Martin. It says featuring Coldplay, which is an interesting, like, part of me wonders, I don't know if we'll come back to, we probably should come back to Coldplay at some point. There's a lot to say there, but I wonder if they have like a contract where, because I don't know, the music seems to be probably generated mostly by the Chainsmokers. It's, you know, like EDM. What's the rest of the band doing? Like, is there a reason? Do they, for solidarity, go, no, we all must be featured?
Maybe.
And then they're clicking
Did
away on keyboards.
Did this appear on a Coldplay album?
Because that sometimes does happen where there's reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the Chainsmokers album, I'm pretty sure. It's on their
debut. Yeah, I bet you
debut.
It was a contract thing.
Like, I didn't deep dive into that specific song, so I don't know, like, are the other guys in Coldplay doing much? Or is it kind of, you know, marketing of Coldplay is better than the lead singer being the feature? Or is it, no, I'm going to bring you all in. We all get to split the money here.
I think
like,
it might
I don't
be
know.
A marketing thing. Like, I think the marketing of Coldplay has more clout than like Chris Martin.
Maybe.
Think, especially, when did this come out? What year?
2017.
Okay. Well, maybe not.
It's not like early Coldplay.
Well, like maybe no one knew who Chris Martin was. Like featuring Chris Martin, like who's that? But they know who Coldplay is.
I feel like people know who Chris Martin
is.
Well,
now, yeah, for sure. And definitely then, so.
So I mentioned this term. I don't think either of us are big EDM heads, but this is sometimes called future bass. Is that a term you really know?
I love the idea of it. I can like understand what it means.
Well, you apparently think the songs all sound the same, so I think you get the vibe.
Yeah, it's
so it's EDM that has hip hop influence and trap influence, this sort of slow tempo of a lot of these beats, but with pop influence and sparkly. It has dubstep influence, but much less harsh than that style would have been. Here's an example of something that's a little more sort of mainline. This is Marshmello, Summer 2016, similar era.
Can I tell you, I don't love it.
You don't love it?
No.
That song or the style?
The
or?
Style. I just feel like it's robots. I feel all I see in my head is a bunch of robots making music. And I know it's not, but I just like, they might as well be saying like 0010111 to me.
I think this is interesting because I think there's personality to these guys.
I'm
that,
sure.
For better or for worse or whatever, that we can talk about in a minute, but I can see what you're saying. It is all very like programmed.
Yeah.
Like the sort of, it's very digital.
Is it
right?
Like
it's
music not, or is it just some guy pressing buttons?
Well, I mean, what's the difference, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like, but it's not. So like there's certain stuff, even certain types of electronic music, like drum and bass or whatever, might still be sampling from a record. Either it's a record or it's a sample of some funk beat from the 60s sped up. A lot of this feels, if not all of it, feels very digital, feels very created in a computer, right? And that is a different kind of vibe to some other forms of even electronic music that have a little more, you think of even like Daft Punk. Well, they'll have like, obviously a vocalist sometimes, but they'll have a real bass player or they'll have a lot of samples of other audio and it feels a little more organic.
I think that's,
this is not that.
That's it. It's the fact that it feels inorganic to me.
Right.
And just my general music taste is, I would say, like overly organic. I like folky singer-songwriter.
Well, yeah, your bass line is like lady with acoustic guitar singing, right?
Yes.
Or jam band or something
well,
like that.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, definitely like lyrics really stripped down, really like emotionally raw and vulnerable. Like that's the type of music I like. And this is the opposite of that.
So do you know much about the Chainsmokers as a band? No. So it's one of these names that just sort of stuck. It was a temporary name and mm-hmm. it stuck. We've probably talked about other artists like that before, but I feel like I'm going to make you hate them more. Do you like this song?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. All right. Okay, yeah. Cool. Because I started this not knowing much about the guys at all, but I liked the song. Let's do the song. And it's kind of, we don't do dance music much. These guys are apparently kind of tech bros.
Okay.
So I was saying like there's humanity behind it, but it may not be the humanity that you're going
to
like.
Are they just here to like make money? Well, and like make formulaic hits to make money?
This is, I think, aren't we all?
No. But
you're right. Actually, you're right. We're not. but I'm not, this is not an original thing. This is something people have been pointing out for years. The sort of tech bro. There's a Pitchfork review of this EP that mentions that these guys are talking about iterating and disrupting and getting a return on investment. And like, they talk like they're app designers or something, or like that they have a startup making an app. They brag about their penis sizes. Oh. They claim as their inspiration, Jeremy Piven's character from Entourage, Ari Gold. Did you see?
They're like
Entourage. Yeah.
It's like the Joe Rogan vibe.
Sort of. I kind of picture TJ Miller's character from Silicon Valley.
Okay.
If you've seen that show.
Yeah, I'm seeing like frosted tips and vests and like chino pants.
I don't know about the tips. I think that the decade might be
like
wrong.
Like a visor is but involved.
They're often collaborating with young, cool indie pop vocalists, though. Like Daya. So Daya is a singer from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard her aside from this song. She has some singles, though. Here's her doing a tune from 2015 called Hide Away. I hadn't heard this, but this hit number 23.
Oh, I already know the song.
Oh, you know it. When do the good boys go to hide away, hide away. I'm a good, good girl who needs a little company. Looking hot in the summer light. You know where do the good boys go to hide away, hide away. She has a real distinct timbre. Her voice. Well done. Tambor is right. Nice. She seems cool too. Yeah. And Halsey's cool.
Super
kind of
cool.
A more punk energy there. Yeah. Like, I wonder, like, Alex, the one who's in charge of the collabs, he does his job well. Like, they find cool people to work with and maybe gives them a little
money.
Soul. Money, yeah. But, like, you know, makes the music have a little bit of a heartbeat. I think, like, Daya adds a lot to Don't Let Me Down.
Yeah, she has a very, like, human voice, which is great on top of robot
and it's processed
music.
To all heck, like, you know, very digital manipulation, but, you know, not quite like a Dua Lipa or Daft Punk would be, but still fits the genre. But, like, yeah, she adds sort of life to it, I think. So the thing that I want to talk about, we're going to talk about rhythm here. And I'm going to start later in the song with the drop section. And I wanted to highlight a cool rhythmic trick that's at work here. That is part of what makes this chorus catchy, part of what makes it fun. And remember a few weeks ago, we talked about octave displacement with
Mariah Carey. I've been thinking about it nonstop ever since.
Let's talk about rhythmic displacement.
Okay.
So take a listen to what's happening in this drop from Don't Let Me Down. So she's repeating the same words. Mm-hmm. And this is a trick in pop songs that tends to occur when someone's repeating a fragment, including the repeating the lyrics. So the first that we'll listen to it again, she first starts Don't Let Me Down on the second beat of the measure. So this is a nice slow. I mentioned future bass has trap influence. These boom, two, three, four. So you're going to hear one Don't Let Me Down on beat two, which sort of emphasizes three, right? Boom. Don't let me down. The down's on beat three. But then it happens again, starting on beat four. So it's the same little melody. First time starting on two. Next time starting on four. And then starts again on two. So we have this shift, one melody shifting around different parts of the measure as it repeats. Here we go. One, two. Two, three. Four.
Yeah, it's like it's hard to track almost. Like, you don't really know where what's happening next. It takes you by surprise in a way that, like, feels kind of nice to me.
Well, and the beat is very predictable there.
Mm-hmm.
It's this sort of slow boom, psh, boom, psh. Her entrances are not predictable, right? And it surprises you, like you said. When we talked about Mariah Carey, the octave displacement was out of nowhere. She would jump way too high or sometimes jump way too low. This is similar, where you have a thing that's starting or repeating in unpredictable places. Mm-hmm. It's being displaced rhythmically.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
not always, but often, usually going to happen when the words are repeated, right? That's the easiest way to do it, is just do the thing again, starting in a lopsided place. And you'll see some other examples of that.
Is that because, like, where we get used to, we have a certain expectation when they sing it the first time where it should go the second time, and it's just easier to trick us because we think we know what's coming because the lyrics are the same?
I think the easy thing to do would be one, don't let me down, and one, don't let me down.
Yeah.
But instead, it's going to be boom, don't let me down, and one, two, three, don't let me down. It's just...
it's way more interesting that
way. More
that
interesting,
way. Like,
right?
A 1,000,000%.
And this example is actually a little understated compared to some of the examples I'm going to play you later.
It's kind of cool, too, because the Chainsmokers, like, I'm not going to say, like, background music, like, that's not the right word, but it is very regimented, like, it's not changing so much, so the lyrical displacement... the vocal displacement, whatever we're calling it, it stands out even more because it feels more organic to me than the background music.
It's definitely more organic. I would also say, though, that the drop, this section is where the synths and the production tends to be more featured, right? We've got the squelchy wah, 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 sort of 2009/1980s acid house kind of sound happening. But the interesting vocal thing is happening there.
Yeah.
Right. So normally the drop is sort of let the DJs show off. But here it's almost like the coolest Daya part, which gives it sort of reinforces the idea that this is more organic that way.
Hmm.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
But this moment is actually the middle of the song, and this is built up to. So I want to show you, just like in the Mariah Carey episode, she was gradually getting more disjointed until she does the massive two octave leap.
Right.
We're building up to the rhythmic disjointedness here. So let's go back to the intro of the song. You're going to hear some dotted rhythms. So one, dot, dot, dot kind of stuff. And this is an undercurrent that goes below the whole song. Remember, we call this, when you're offbeat, syncopation, syncopated music. Cool?
It is cool.
Yeah. So Daya comes in at the beginning of the first verse, and she's primarily emphasizing on beats 2 and 4. Crashing, hit a wall. Right now, I need a miracle. Hurry up now, I need a miracle. So what's cool about that is she starts out just da-da. Da da da, but then the next lines, it fills that space. Da 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 da. Sort of repeating the same rhythmic fragment on a different part of the measure to fill that space. It's not quite rhythmic displacement, but it's sort of copy pasting that disrupts the pattern we've heard.
Yeah. Okay.
So this is not nearly as disjointed as what happens later in the song, but it's sort of leading us to, remember, this happens before the stuff we just heard. Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. So here we go with the first chorus. And first off, the rhythms are a little strange here. There's some dotted notes or eighth triplets. It's kind of unclear to hear exactly what she's
eighth
doing.
Eighth triplets.
So yeah, it, basically when she goes, don't let me down, I'm not totally sure if she's doing triplet, triplet, or a dotted dot, 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 dot,
okay.
dot. It's just, you tell me. I don't know. I listened to this a bunch and
I
know,
need
I'm
the
like,
sheet
I don't
music
know. Listen.
To know for sure. I think it's a dotted.
Yeah, I don't think they're triplets. It's sort of like just imprecise enough.
I think at the beginning of that phrase, she starts with a quick triplet.
I need ya, I need ya, I need. But then there's need ya right now.
That's,
need ya
they're
right.
They're different.
Yeah.
So one has to be a triplet different. And one yeah. has to be the other one.
So I think it's triplet, triplet, mm-hmm. dot, 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 dot.
Yeah.
And the emphasis there is on need. I need ya, right? Starting
Guys,
on beat one.
Am I like a musician?
Yeah, I mean,
do you think?
There's a video on YouTube of you playing the flute when you're like 16
like
years
12
old.
Years old.
Everybody go listen
don't,
to
don't do it.
Go listen to wait, what? When did we talk about
I'm
that?
Not telling you.
You and Godspell? Maybe it's in a mailbag. That's right. One of your friends wrote in. Oh, mm-hmm. I love it. Listen mm-hmm. for it, folks.
Thanks, Palin.
And then yeah. the, I need you right now is like syncopated, like a lot of this is. But then instead of emphasizing I need you, it's I need you right now. Mm. So instead of the emphasis being on need, it's the emphasis on I, which is a displacement. Listen again.
I need you, I need you, I need
emphasizing
right
need,
now.
And then yeah, I need you right now.
Yeah.
I need you right
so
now.
Don't let me, don't let me, don't let me down. I think I'm losing my mind now. It's in my-
So it's disrupting our expectation because it should be, I need you, I need you, I need you right now. I need you right now.
Yeah.
But it's, I need you, I need you, I need you right now. I need you right now.
And she even changes the melody too. Like it's not what you just sang. It's something different.
Right,
she
right.
goes up.
I need you right now.
Yeah.
Yep. Totally. Not exactly just copy-pasty rhythmic displacement, but she is displacing, right. disrupting the emphasis, right? Let's see what happens in the second half of the chorus.
That part's kind of fun, too.
Yeah, leading us to the drop, right? Mm-hmm. So triplets or something like them. Don't mm-hmm. let me, don't let me, don't let me down. Emphasis on beat four. And then the next one starts on beat two. One, don't mm-hmm. let me down, don't let me down. Listen again. So she starts at different places to emphasize different places.
It's in my head.
So this leads us back to the drop where we have the real rhythmic displacement in full. We like built up to it
mm-hmm.
and then it happened. And then it happens again because this song is sort of, you know, structurally then it repeats and we go to another verse.
Yeah.
And it kind of continues with that. It's pretty cool though, right?
It's really
makes
cool.
It, work.
It has like a high level of, like, there's just enough distortion to make it interesting, but not too much that you like lose the plot, as the kids say.
Totally. It's interesting you're saying distortion. I think disruption, ooh, which I hate because that's the programmer language, right? But they're disrupting the beat like Uber disrupted the taxi industry 20 years ago.
Right. Just like it.
Just like that, right?
That's the first thing I think of. No, I think about this idea of distortion quite a bit in terms of like cognitive distortions. Do you know what a cognitive distortion is?
No. I mean, I could kind of guess what
well,
it would
I guess.
Mean, but
it's pretty easy.
You know, like a misperception or warping something in your mind maybe to suit your yeah. own biases or whatever.
You're ready to teach counseling skills in the fall. Perfect. Crushing it.
We should switch classes in the fall. I think
we should just swap
them. You're good at rhythm. At least you can come in and sub for the rhythmic parts.
I know what a triplet is.
Yeah.
And I know compound meter.
Yeah.
Love a compound meter.
Yeah.
There are several different like cognitive distortions, especially in cognitive behavioral therapy. We use this language a lot. So cognitive behavioral therapy, or what we call CBT, is probably the most widely practiced type of therapy. Like if you go to a therapist today in America, probably they're practicing some level of CBT. So it's other forms of therapy like Freudian therapy or more person-centered therapy are really looking to like deep dive into what makes you tick and what your motivations are, especially with Freud. But in cognitive behavioral therapy, they're not, this is so cavalier to say, but they don't really care. They don't really care like why you're doing this behavior. They just want you to change the behavior.
Strategies so, for,
like a skill-based,
getting
right?
through stuff.
Like if you're, okay, so for me, I'm really scared of driving over bridges. Like I don't like bridges.
Okay.
I'll go out of my way. I'll like change my route. So I don't have to drive over big bridges because I panic. I don't like it. Like it's the heights or something.
It's the height. Okay, would you ford a river in Oregon Trail?
I would.
Because it's not the river. It's the height above the river.
It's honestly.
You'd put the wagons and float them across.
I don't mind that. It's the stuff over my head. Like if it's a bridge that doesn't have like the stuff suspension, I'm okay with it. It's not the height
of
the bridge.
You don't like the Tobin.
I don't like, and that's where it all
or
started.
Or like San Francisco Bay Bridge with the earthquake and then they collapsed back in the 80s. Yeah.
Like we went to Newport, Rhode Island a couple of years ago for like a family trip and I was like paralyzed. Like I couldn't, I can't hang.
Your kid had to drive.
No, I just like chewed an Ativan and my husband drove. It worked out really well for me. But I just, so either way, for cognitive behavioral therapy, they're not wondering why. I'm scared of driving over bridges. There's a reason, but they're not concerned about that. They just want to get me to drive over the bridge. And they'll do like interventions to help me like, okay, let's look at a bunch of pictures of bridges or now let's practice you're in a car with someone while they're driving over a bridge and you don't chew the Ativan and like you keep your eyes open the whole time, right? And then eventually you get to the point that you can drive across the bridge. And then they can say, we fixed you. We've fixed your cognitive distortion around bridges. That now we can bill your insurance because we've solved the problem. It's very practical. It's very like a practical approach
to
therapy.
I'm like detecting a lot of sort of negativity about this style. And you're saying it's the most common kind of therapy.
I just like feels a really like, I don't know. It's definitely works. It definitely works. And it works well for people that are solution focused, which a lot of people are solution focused. But a lot of people are emotion focused. Like for me, I want to fix. I don't want to just put a cast on the broken bone.
Why are you afraid of bridges?
Yeah, I want to like fix. I want to like set the bone first before I put the cast on it.
Right.
I don't want to just put the Band-Aid on. I want to like figure out why. But that's just my nature.
Can I predict that the therapists in our audience, which, you know, we have some musicians in our audience. Mm-hmm. So I assume some therapists in our audience and some of them are right now readying their phones to send us an email, nevermusicpod@gmail.com, saying, I totally talk about the fact that you had a toxic relationship with your mother while we're talking about bridges. Your fear of spiders is actually because of, you know, arachnophobia in the 80s. Probably people are unpacking that stuff in therapy, right?
Yeah.
It's not ignored.
It's not. And the big thing that I teach in my counseling classes is you can't just pick one thing. Like there are some skills based, like there's dialectical behavioral therapy or DBT that is very, there is a formula to it. There is like a set of standards around it. It is kind of more rigid, but like cognitive behavioral therapy, any good therapist is incorporating all of it in session.
Got it. So it's not just, I am a Freudian psychotherapist. Let's do this. It's like you're going to therapy and they'll do CBT, CBT for a while, but they're also being informed by.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this music is influenced by dubstep, but also influenced by trap and influenced by pop.
Exactly.
And stuff.
It's all a little bit of everything.
Okay,
and you kind of like suit your client. Like for you, you'd respond really well to CBT because it's solution focused and you're a solution focused type of human. You might want like a worksheet to help you solve a problem. I'm not.
Or like a, you know,
like
if this happens to you, here are strategies to cope with it or, Here are strategies to concretely. Cool yourself down. Yeah.
And for me, that's fine. I'm happy to learn the strategies, but I want a deep dive. I want to pick all the cobwebs out and see what's up.
Sure.
So in cognitive behavioral therapy, we focus a lot on cognitive distortions. There's several different types. They're like coded types of cognitive distortions.
And do we get another list with like numbers and letters that people in our Discord can assign to themselves? Theory.
No, there are a PDF on the Discord, but there are like set cognitive distortions. And one of them is catastrophizing. Mm. And this song, the lyrics of this song, it catastrophizes a lot. So can you guess what catastrophizing means?
If I have a fight with my significant other and then I have a therapy session or whatever, I would just be like, oh my God, they're going to leave me. This is the worst. Oh my God, I can't believe. Or like, I was late to work once and they're going to fire me. And then what's going to happen? I'm going to lose my house. Like all that kind of thing.
It like you, as the spiral. Kids say, you crash out.
Oh, right? Crash out.
That's what
out.
The kids are saying these days.
Yeah.
And it is like, oh, I forgot to change the laundry and my husband's going to get so mad because he needs his work clothes and then he's going to not have clean work clothes and then he's going to lose his job and then we're going to lose our house and then we're going to have to move back in with my mom and I can't stand my mom. I actually love my mom if she's listening. But it becomes like all of a sudden I went from not changing the laundry as the problem to like now I have to put my mom in a nursing home because she's gone crazy because she's living with us.
Yeah. That
it like spirals out and you can't get hold of it. And that's what the lyrics of this song is doing. It's capturing the sense of all or nothing thinking.
Can you give me some examples? Did you write anything down?
I need you, I need you, I need you right now.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that's really the only lyric of this song, right? Like, don't let me down, right? It's just kind of this cyclical thought, this like cyclical spiral that she's in.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of made me think of this.
It's almost like when we talked about Can't Get You Out of My Head, persistent, what are they called?
Intrusive thoughts.
It's a little bit like that, right?
It's in the same like kind of family of distorted thinking.
Oh my God, what'd you say? Crash out?
Yeah. Is that in the lyrics?
Crash in.
Yeah.
Hit a wall. Right now, I need a miracle. Hurry up now, I need a miracle. Stranded, reaching out. I call your name, but you're not around. I say your name, but you're not around. And then we get the stuff you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The next verse, running out of time. I really thought you were on my side, but now there's nobody by my side. That one's pretty simple. Yeah, I can kind of see what you mean. Like, is it catastrophizing? It's certainly like there's a desperation to it. That's a little maybe extreme for the scenario.
Yeah, like this type of all or nothing thinking is like what we kind of think of when we think of catastrophizing, that like either you're here and you love me or you're not right next to me and you hate me and you're dead to me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's that spiral happens in between. And the way that the song feels to me with like the electronic background and her like vocal distortion and the way that she's coming in a really fragmented way, it just reminded me of that feeling when you are kind of spiraling out in your own head. So it made that connection for me when I was listening to the song.
The rhythm's coming at erratic times.
Yeah.
Has a little intrusive thoughtness to it, a little stream of consciousness to it. I think, can I really go stretch here?
Yeah.
You're hearing distortion. I'm hearing very digital.
Sure.
And digital, everything in the digital realm, as opposed to the analog realm of data, is encoded as zeros and ones, which is yes or no. And if you're talking about catastrophizing being essentially all or nothing thinking, it's either happening or it's not. That is what a zero and a one in a Boolean expression or like binary code of a computer, right? Which is what this song is, that digital sound is that way because nothing is, there's no in-betweens, right? We have digital music. Obviously, we have so many millions of data points we can use now with modern technology, but it's still at its core is an expression of yes or no, which is kind of black or white robotic as opposed to the shades of in between, which is a much more human and, as you said, organic.
A million percent more nuanced, right?
Yeah.
Like by definition. So this, the rigid perception here of this all or nothing thinking, because it is so subhuman, like it's not how we're programmed as creatures.
Sure.
can lead to like an emotional collapse or like an emotional spiral because there's nothing that's that rigid. Everything has nuance, right? There aren't answers to problems.
Yeah.
Emotional problems. It's always something.
You're not going to put your mother in the nursing home, but your husband might lose their job. Like there is something that could be bad there, but it's not as bad.
And that's why CBT is tricky for me because it's not just about, can you cross that bridge? It's about what's stopping you from trying in the first place. For me as a pseudo clinician,
right? See, there's nuance, right?
There's
I think then you would, you use CBT as well as
like, okay, let's like unpack it and see like what your fear comes from. And then see how we can find a path to move forward. And it really talks about locus of control. Like either you have an internal or an external locus of control. Like what's driving your mental bus, essentially? Like, are you more intrinsically or extrinsically motivated? And I think that in CBT, it is focusing on more of an external locus of control, like just getting you to execute the task for some external reward. And an internal locus of control or intrinsic motivation is about like you really wanting to do it. Like you want to really solve the problem. So how I teach that is I say to my students, like, think about why you're at college. Are you at college to get a degree so you can get a good job so you can make money? Those are external. That's an extrinsic motivation. You're motivated by things outside yourself. Are you here because your mom and dad said you have to come? That's an external extrinsic motivation. And some people, especially our older students, are more intrinsically motivated. They just want to learn. They really want to learn the knowledge and learn the information. And that's why they're there. When you think of your students, where do you put them? Because I've taught students at your school and I've taught students at my school. And I know that there's a difference between our two cohorts.
I think there's also the music major thing. Mm. There's not a lot of music majors that are in it because mom and dad told them they have to.
Right.
And there's not a lot of music majors that are in it because it'll give them a great job when they're done. Because guess what? It's hard out there. I'm providing them with skills that will make them more likely to be successful in their musical exploits. But the degree, the paper doesn't give you crap.
Yeah.
I have a doctorate and it doesn't entitle me. I love how the degrees say, confers upon you the degree of Doctor of Musical Arts and all the, what is it? And all the rights and privileges upon that. And I'm like, mean nothing?
Well, when you book a room in a hotel, you get to say doctor.
I get to say doctor, I guess, if I want, right?
You should.
But I think I'm already, if you compare them to business majors, I'm already dealing with more intrinsic motivation. But on the other hand, and this is why I was kind of like, when you were saying what you were saying about intrinsic versus intrinsic, intrinsic versus extrinsic, even that needs to be more analog because all my internally motivated students, what do they want? The admiration of fans.
Right.
They want to be successful. They want to have a gainful employment doing something they love. I was inexplicably drawn to make music and art, but to do so in a way that could sustain myself.
Right.
So if I was only intrinsically motivated, would I be doing all the things that I have done? Am I doing this podcast for me or because people will listen to it and like it? Like, so it's, I think artists in general have the intrinsic and extrinsic values balanced at all times. Right. Anyways, like, who am I doing this for? And the answer is yourself and other people.
Right.
And that's otherwise,
the takeaway,
you can't justify doing it.
It can, and most oftentimes is a little bit of both.
Right.
Like you can be in college because you want to learn the content and you want to better yourself as a creator or learn more about what makes you and the people around you tick. And you know that in some fields, the degree counts.
Sure.
The piece of paper counts. Making your parents happy counts. So they keep paying your rent for you.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah.
So it can be both. And this goes back to what when we were discussing SEAL about like major and minor. That you need both. You can't, if you're just driven by money, right? Maybe these tech bros are just driven by money and they're just like, you know, this is formulas for how we're going to make hits and make money. Like, that's a drag, you know?
I have no evidence that that's true, but
in my
I hope
head,
it's not true.
I hope it's not true, Like, maybe, I don't know, but...
All right.
It's
yeah.
interesting. It's all very interesting.
Let me come back to this okay. musical idea
Great,
real quick,
please.
And then we'll wrap up on this. This is super fascinating, though. Can I give some more examples? I have a bunch of examples,
yeah,
actually.
Let's do it.
Other examples of rhythmic displacement. This is a very simple one, and it makes all the difference, though. Starts on beat 4,
mm-hmm.
and then the whole thing repeats, but starting this time on beat 1. See what the effect is. Christina Aguilera, 1999.
Yeah. That's your sing in the shower song, right? When you're driving in the
I was never a Christina Aguilera guy.
Christina or Britney?
I think now I'm drawn more to Britney.
Yes.
The weirdness of Britney.
What's happening?
Not Britney
there?
The person, but some of the music. That was 1999. I had wanted nothing to do with this kind of music.
Okay.
I think this is a cool song. To the point, though, 1, 2, 3. What a girl wants. And then later we get 3, 4. What a girl mm-hmm. wants, right on beat 1.
Right. It like is anticipatory.
The first time
yes.
is, and then it happens late.
Yes.
All right. So here's another example. This thing starts on beat 1. And then when it repeats, it starts on the end of 4, meaning a half beat too early. The Eagles, of course, 1976, Life in the Fast Lane.
A great one.
Yeah. Starts on beat 1. Da 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 da. But the last time, 1, 2, 3, 4. Da 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 da. Just a little anticipation.
It's like a hiccup or something.
Kind of like a hiccup, like the record skipped. And it makes a big difference. It's pretty awesome. So this is actually a song I called out when we did our Grammys episode. I think I maybe even called out, wow, I really love how this song has so much rhythmic displacement.
Nerd.
Charlie XCX.
Okay.
2024, Talk Talk from Brat. She says, you know, wish you'd talk, wish comes in on beat 4, then beat 3, then beat 2, then beat 1. She's almost mm-hmm. counting down. It's different every time she does it. Check it out. I wish you'd talk.
It's really like that whole album is very good. And I like this lyrical displacement in this song. I think it adds a lot of value. And it reminds me of how she has so much staying power and will be around for so long. And people are paying attention to her, but she's not getting like the critical acclaim. Or she's not winning the awards. That
album was Grammy nominated.
It was Grammy nominated for sure. But like, was it better than Cowboy Carter? Like,
I think Cowboy Carter is better, but you and I disagreed on Cowboy Carter.
Well, you know, actually, since we've...
Everybody, listen to our now no... Our guesses are irrelevant, but we have some good album deep dives in our Grammys 2024 episode.
And like ever since that episode, I was like, you know what, Mark? I really value your opinion on music. I do. And sometimes, like most of the time, if you really like something, there's a reason for it. So after that... I didn't tell you this then, but I went back and like listened to Cowboy Carter and like then got really hooked on it. And I was
so
like,
you like it
actually
now. Okay,
like a
okay.
really, really good album. So yeah, you were right. As
I
always.
Didn't like Brat as much as some of the other records we did. I mm-hmm. liked it, but I didn't like it. I had other horses I was betting on.
Like the Andre 3000.
Not I appreciated that. No, I mean, the one that kind of blew me away, I thought Cowboy Carter was great, but the one that blew me away was the Chaperone in particular. Yeah. But okay. We're probably doing Grammys again this year.
I'd love to. Yeah, I'm
okay.
into it.
It's almost a promise. Okay, two more examples.
Oh, I'm really into that Benson Boone.
All right, some of you guys are getting sick, listeners, of the same examples, but you have to understand, I have been deep diving in certain artists mm-hmm. to try to choose what song I want to actually do an episode on. And what that creates is a bunch of moments where I'm like, holy crap, that's really cool. Write it down. And then I end up using it in other episodes.
Are we in the Taylor Swift vortex right now?
We're talking about Haim again.
Okay, very good.
Because I want to do a Haim episode and we're probably going to do one, but I almost did it on this song, but this is not a super famous song of theirs.
Is it The Wire?
No, I love that song so much.
So good.
I'm going to use that. That's going to come up as a musical example elsewhere. So this is Walking Away from 2017. This is a bunch of different repetitions of the same words all happening on different beats.
Do you think they'll play that song live?
At the concert that we might go to.
That we might go to.
That airs probably 2 weeks, or that happens 2 weeks before this episode will drop. Yeah, we're still a few weeks ahead of y'all. I don't know.
It's so good with headphones on.
Well, because there's all the left and right pan stuff.
Yeah.
One more example.
Okay.
And yes.
Is it Ham again? Taylor Swift?
Taylor Swift is back again.
Is it still on Folklore? Are we stuck?
No, we're not. Okay. We're not on Folklore. We're on Midnights.
Midnight's is so good.
Karma.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if I hadn't decided to do Cardigan, and if I hadn't decided to do this song for Rhythmic Displacement, mm-hmm. I would have maybe done Karma for Rhythmic Displacement. Just without getting into the detail, she keeps basically saying the same figure with slightly different words, starting on different beats, but also shortening and lengthening, and it creates a very chaotic and awesome hook.
And it's even more pronounced in this example because the 2 and 4 beat are so prominent.
Yeah, the backbeat.
The backbeat is so like regimented in a very lovely and organic way that it really it makes her vocal displacement really stand out.
You're right. And I think that's similar to this song, to Chainsmokers, right?
Yeah.
The steadiness of the drums amplifies the not steadiness of the vocal. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my question for you, in my head, like if you told me a bunch of programmers or tech bros had started a musical group, the style of music that makes sense for me is like super digital EDM
with
an attractive woman singing lead vocals, just like this.
Okay.
This fits. If you told me that a tech startup guy started up a band with his chief information officer, it would sound like this.
Okay, got it.
So let's play with this a little bit.
Okay.
What would be the stereotypical, or like what in your head, for better or worse, do you imagine the kind of music a profession would make? So a bunch of psychologists or psychiatrists or therapists start a band or a musical group. What is it? What kind of music is it?
Like if our side gig was
If you and
music.
Your colleagues in your department started, or even just you go to a conference
and they're like, special guest tonight.
And
it's like the psych professor band.
Yes. What would that be? What kind of music? Probably not like this.
Probably not like this.
No.
And it's, you know what? I think that psych professors are kind of full of surprises.
Okay.
And we love catharsis. I think it would be like a metal band, like
ooh,
a new metal band.
A new metal band?
I think it would be.
No.
I think it would be like something
with like
completely
rap shouty stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like really
right.
like kind of aggro and violent almost, because we like, you have to get it out somehow. And that would be good catharsis. The stereotypical answer would be like singer-songwriter, really like in your feelings type of music. But we do that enough in our day jobs. We need like an outlet. I think it would be like thrash metal.
So that's where, like, if I go music professors, that's why there's kind of also two answers too.
Right.
Because the stereotypical answer is it's going to be jazz, or it's going to be like prog rock or something fancy.
Right.
But
something
like
fancy.
The actual answer is like my band where we're like,
just having fun.
Let's make pop music that's done at a really high level. Like, right. Which is because we're sick of having to be fancy, right? Out of all our other gigs. Any other careers, or should we just limit it to ours and not insult anybody?
I think that that's fine.
We'll leave it at that. The programmers are insulted. The psych professors and the music professors,
sure
we can handle it. We're used to it. Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. please leave us a rating and a review, and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media, and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Nevermind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.